What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
My Doctor is Half Human. The Night of the Doctor by Drew Meyer, Greensboro, North Carolina. As an American of a certain age, there was a time in my life when I was keenly aware of an absolute truth, that Tom Baker was the Doctor. There was no evidence to the contrary. Raised in a southeastern tourist town that valued neon-colored beachwear supplies above culture, exposure to Doctor Who was limited. I had some repeats, and I had some comics, all of which pointed to the fact that the Doctor was a tall, gangly, curly-haired madman with a toothy grin, manic eyes, and a ridiculously long scarf. Then came 1996. Then came Paul McGann. My Doctor. When the movie aired, I didn't have the wealth of the show's history to burden my viewing experience. Having never seen it before, I didn't recognize McCoy as the Doctor. Having never had regeneration explained to me, I didn't know why this corpse was morphing into someone else. For the first and last time, I watched Doctor Who without comparison, because I didn't have another Doctor to compare it to. Not really. I was introduced to Doctor Who sometime after 11 p.m. on a Saturday night by my babysitter, who outranked me by a year. I don't remember the episode. It starred Tom Baker, and chances are it involved an alien. But it was more than my 7-year-old nerves could handle. It was probably a decade before I watched my next episode. In that time, my sole exposure to the Doctor was via back issues of the comic book, which I read and reread with much gusto until the issues fell into a permanent state of disrepair. Then came May of 1996. As symbolically heavy-handed as it was, the movie sparked a desire to learn more. I came into possession of The 70s by Messrs. Howe, Stammers, and Walker. Over the next few months, I pored over the book, trying to reconcile what I was learning with what I already knew of the Doctor, that the Doctor used to be gangly and scarf-wearing and now looked like Oscar Wilde, that he used to walk in eternity and now participated in high-speed motorcycle chases, that the Doctor had maintained an avuncular, asexual facade and was now kissing women, that the Doctor was an alien Time Lord from the planet Gallifrey in the constellation of Cerberus and was now, very controversially, I would later learn, half-human, which didn't bother me, because it worked for Spock. I compared a 90-minute movie to 7 seasons of the show, realized that there was another 19 years' worth of history to explore, and promptly moved on to other matters. And that was that for 9 years. Then came 2005, and the relaunch of Doctor Who. Having not had cable for almost a decade, I didn't watch the first series until it was out on DVD. I liked Eccleston. But he wasn't my Doctor. Too much ears, not enough wig. Tennant was a step in the right direction where kissing was concerned, and Smith eventually found a use for a motorcycle. Over the next 8 years, my love of the show grew. I watched the first 26 seasons in under a year. I read novelizations, too. I was invited to co-host a YouTube show devoted to Doctor Who, GallifreyPirateRadio.com, shameless plug. And as the fervor of the approaching 50th anniversary loomed, I began touring the Southeast convention circuit. In 2013, Doctor Who was everywhere. By now, my love of the program enveloped all aspects of the show. I was entrenched in its history, well-versed in the television program, less acquainted with, but still enthusiastic about the Big Finish audios, and admittedly anemic with regards to the new adventure novels. So whenever I took part in a Doctor Who panel, and the moderator or the audience asked us what we wanted to see for the 50th, I always gave the same answer. I wanted to see Paul McGann recognized as the Doctor. All the evidence was there. He had at his back 70 novels and an equal number of audio dramas and 9-plus years of comics. He deserved to be recognized more than just a doodle in a book or an odd misfiring info stamp, because the Eighth Doctor, the middle child of Doctor Who, was more than just a reminder of a failed pilot. Then came the morning of November the 13th, 2013. That chilly morning was one of the few times I was thankful for my need to awake early for the 40-minute commute to work. I had my morning tea. I went online, and there I saw the link, not yet spoiled, to the Night of the Doctor. I didn't know which Doctor I was expecting, but I was rapt for 7 minutes and immediately following, rapt again for the second viewing. There was my Doctor's name on the screen, the modern score playing in the background, and his voice. That voice I listened to on so many previously non-canonical audio dramas, listing the names of his companions, bringing each of them into the realm of canon. What a morning. The 50th hadn't even arrived yet, and I had already gotten what I wanted most. I was glowing. It felt like a personal triumph. Would I have been a fan of Doctor Who without the Eighth Doctor? Certainly. The show is too good to ignore, and I'm sure I would have made my way back eventually. Would I have enjoyed the 50th without the Night of the Doctor? Of course. The 50th anniversary of Doctor Who gave us a great deal to celebrate. But with all that made the anniversary so special, multi-Doctor comics and audio dramas, and the return of missing episodes, the monthly revisited specials, the amassed gatherings of costume fans who took over cinemas worldwide to watch a feature-length episode of Doctor Who in 3D. For all of that, my reason to celebrate was the welcoming back, by new and classic fans alike, of the Doctor that welcomed me to the show. The Eighth Doctor. My Doctor. This essay was originally included in the collection You and Who, Contact Has Been Made, Volume 2.
Hello, Rob. We're back with another episode of You and Who Talking. How are you?
I'm well, JR. These weeks are flying by.
Well, they certainly are for us, recording these intros all in one big session once a month.
You're not meant to say that.
Not that I'm giving away any secrets or anything.
Not at all.
We've just heard from Drew Meyer on Night of the Doctor. That was another excellent little essay there.
Certainly was our first US entry as well.
Yes, indeed it was. Because a lot of the authors for these You and Who books, I suppose because of, you know, the fact that this is where they're being done, a lot of the voices are UK voices. So it's nice to throw in the occasional non-UK voice every now and again. And that's the first time we've heard from somebody from North America. And I think that was very nice to hear, and very nice to hear a different perspective.
Absolutely, and even from the point of view, there are shades of my own personal story in there, insofar as he was watching a Tom Baker episode, got scared, and then it was years before he watched the show again, and that is precisely my story. I got scared of the theme music and didn't watch Doctor Who again for years.
Yeah, I can imagine that's probably happened for a lot of people. And actually, that's one of the great things about the sort of You and Who books and the whole sort of idea of it, is that even if the story's taking place half a world away, somebody else's childhood might be exactly the same as yours, or there will be things about it that you recognise.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So I loved hearing Drew's story.
Yeah, they're kind of universal essays, these.
Yeah.
And coming up, and I didn't really want to do too much of this, but this has been a case of going with the first ones that we've had in. But coming up, we've got another member of the Blue Box podcast.
We do indeed. Mark Cockrum. Well, I guess all you guys have microphones and know how to podcast, so it's no surprise that you got yours in first.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And of course, as well, because they're so close to me, when I was doing the You and Who books, you could almost guarantee that they'd be getting themselves involved. So no doubt there will be plenty more from various Blue Box podcasters as this podcast goes forward. But hey, that's how it goes.
That's right. And here, Mark uses City of Death to sort of get himself going, but it's really more about just his relationship with Doctor Who, I think. And that's what a lot of You and Who essays are like.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes, well, this is the thing about doing the Contact Has Been Made books, is that I said we had to have one essay for every story, even if that essay wasn't about that story. And for instance, last week we had Lee talking about the Pescatons, because really he wanted to do an essay about Horror of Fang Rock, but that was already gone. And I said, it's fine, cover Horror of Fang Rock and the Pescatons, and he managed to do both. So here we've got Mark talking about City of Death, but he's also talking about things like the Horns of Nymon and all sorts of other things as well.
Exactly, and it's because City of Death was his first story that got him into Doctor Who, so yeah, very cool.
Right, I think it's time we should let people hear it.
I think so.
A Tale of Two City of Deaths by Mark Cockrum, age 40, Exeter, UK. First story, City of Death. My earliest memory of Doctor Who is of the insane machine in City of Death I later discovered that turned an egg into a chicken to the point of death and then back to an egg again. I also remembered a thrilling high-speed bicycle chase through bustling city streets, which never actually happened. Which just goes to show how our young minds remember fragments of information and simply fill in the gaps in order to try and make sense of it. Now, at the age of 6, my mind was probably more occupied with playing with Lego, and rather tellingly, it wasn't long before I was making a Lego TARDIS. Never could get the hang of making it bigger on the inside. By the time the Horns of Nymon began its run, I was hooked. Of course, these days it's looked upon as a campy, over-the-top piece of fluff, but at that young age, it was an incredibly exciting story with some clever ideas, like the constantly changing configuration of the walls within the power complex. I still have the Target novelisation knocking around somewhere, which took my new obsession to a whole new level. I think the tie-in novelisations did more than anything else to encourage me to take up reading. My appetite for these books was voracious, as well as giving me the chance to catch up on the previous stories involving my new hero Tom Baker, they opened up my eyes to the realisation that there had been three previous Doctors, which fuelled my burgeoning interest even further. I remember when Peter Davison took over the role, I got my hands on a copy of Jean-Marc Lefissier's programme guide, which I must have read from cover to cover many, many times over. I can remember wondering why the BBC hadn't shown Evil of the Daleks. This had sounded like a much more exciting story than the Crotons, which had been shown as part of the Five Faces of Doctor Who collection of stories chosen to lead up to season 19. I was sure that there must have been a perfectly good reason. Still, I was convinced that they would probably show it again at a later date. These days, with all the existing stories available on beautifully restored DVDs, you have the entire series at your fingertips. Back then, however, VHS was only just starting to make its way into people's homes, and the BBC took a long time to release any Doctor Who stories for public consumption. That void was very pleasantly filled by the wonderful Target books, but eventually the fan gene kicks in and you want to see the stories, not just read them. We got our VHS recorder, complete with newfangled remote control attached by a cord, in 1985, just too late to record Peter Davison's thrilling swan song. My parents knew the extent of my Doctor Who obsession and kindly forked out what would have been a small fortune in those days for a copy of Revenge of the Cybermen on VHS for what must have been my 12th birthday. I watched it countless times, and this was my introduction to Harry Sullivan and Sarah Jane Smith. I was immediately smitten with this time team. I mean, how could you not be? Sarah Jane, the plucky, feisty female companion, and Harry, the brave, if somewhat daft, male companion. Harry Sullivan is an imbecile! And the Doctor, my Doctor, up against the deadly Cybermen. So, Doctor Who became a very important part of my childhood. I remember being absolutely inconsolable when my older brother, who liked Doctor Who but wasn't as into it, got to meet my hero Tom Baker in full Fourth Doctor get-up at a designer monster competition being held locally. But I wasn't allowed to go, I must have been 6 or 7 at the time, still I can laugh about it now. Gritting my teeth as I type. I also have a vague recollection of going on a trip organised by our primary school to see a theatre production of Treasure Island with Matthew Waterhouse playing Jim Hawkins. I remember being very excited about this, although looking back maybe I can see why some of my friends weren't quite so thrilled. But that first, albeit wonky memory from City of Death stuck with me. For a very long time, I just thought I must have dreamt it, so imagine my surprise many years later when watching old reruns of Doctor Who on UK Gold, the chicken machine appeared on screen and I was joyously transported back to the autumn of 1979. That feeling of dawning realisation was wonderful. Watching the story back as an adult, I could appreciate the real-life romance between Tom and Lala making itself apparent on screen. Tom's effortless delivery of some classic one-liners courtesy of another of my heroes, the late, great Douglas Adams. And a really memorable score by Dudley Simpson. The story achieved some of the highest ratings in the show's history, thanks in part to a strike by the only other broadcaster at the time, but there is something truly magical about City of Death. It encapsulates everything I love about Doctor Who, and it's a perfect example of why the programme has endured for 50 years and hopefully will continue to do so for many more to come. Taken from You and Who, Contact Has Been Made.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.